You're listening to a message from the traditional service at St. Peter's United Methodist Church in Katy, Texas.
I'm so thankful that over the next 3 weeks, I'll be here with you and we'll be talking about something that's very near and dear to me. A person, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And you may know who that is. Maybe you've read the very famous biography written by Metaxas on him. Perhaps you get your history from the likes of Valkyrie, starring Tom Cruise, the plot to kill Adolf Hitler. He had a cameo appearance in that. But Bonhoeffer is a pioneering historical figure, not only in World War II history, but really the life of the church. He was someone in the early 1900s who grappled deeply with what it meant to live faithfully as a disciple of Jesus Christ. He's someone who, because he grew up in Germany and was German, felt a calling to resist the Nazi regime. It was a calling that would ultimately cost him his life, as his resistance led to his arrests and eventual execution. And yet, he still produced some very powerful writings that perhaps you've read. One of them gives this series its name, his book entitled The Cost of Discipleship. I want to warn you, though, that much like the man himself, it is much denser than it first appears as far as what he's trying to communicate and offer up. This is not an easy Sunday read. I would compare this to the first time if you've ever tried to sit down and read Leviticus in one session. Savor it. Take your time. Read through the words. The Cost of Discipleship offers some challenging illustrations and dynamics based on his reflection of the Sermon on the Mount. And it really centers on, and the focus of our time today is going to be his initial thought, which is there's a difference between cheap and costly grace. Cheap grace is almost a spectator's sport. It's something you can do easily, slide in and out of. If you're talking about cheap grace as it pertains to your faith, it means that you show up on Sunday or Wednesday night, but that's really your time to be faithful, quote unquote. The rest of your life doesn't have a lot to do with what you do in those sessions. Costly grace, on the other hand, requires something of you. It takes something from you. There is something you have to invest. It requires a change, often of the heart. To engage with costly grace, you cannot be a spectator. You become a servant. However, we know in life that there's a narrative that goes on in our culture and our surrounding world that doing things that are hard or uncomfortable are not things that you should do. You should stop, give up on it. Only pick what's easy, what makes you feel good. How about a hypothetical thought experiment for you to illustrate this point? I want you to imagine you're in ninth grade. Let's just pick a high school. Let's say Katy High School. And let's just say that perhaps you have a pretty cool to non-existent social or dating life, and you think it's a great idea to take French to help you ask out girls. Hypothetical situation here, people. So you find yourself in French class in order to improve your dating life because you hear that it is the language of love, but after almost 2 years of being in this class, you have felt very little love from the pages, from the testing, and from your mastery. And one of the tests overall that really makes you struggle is the oral exam. A beautiful opportunity for you to put on a headset, to listen to a pre-recorded tape that your teacher has made, and you have to respond in French to the French prompts. And perhaps during this session, you forget that your mic is a live mic. So whatever you say out loud is recorded for your French teacher to hear. And let's say that next week you find yourself in class and the teacher's going over how the oral exam went. It said some of you did very well. You've clearly been working on and mastering the French language. Some of you didn't do so well, and some of you, we'll put you in a category, we'll just call it Jameson. Again, hypothetical here. Jameson, I appreciate the enthusiasm you brought to the exam, but I need you to know something. Darn it is not a French word. It's not a good way to start or end any French sentence, and you shouldn't use it in almost every single prompt during the exam. She made a good point. However, by that point in my French career, if you can even call it that, I was checked out. Foreign languages are not for me. I struggle with them. I'm not one of those people that can just pick up a foreign language. I can hardly master the basics of English. It's a miracle I'm talking with you here today. And so by that point, I had checked out. It was uncomfortable. I didn't want it. And so perhaps you've had this experience. The harder that something becomes, the less you want to engage until finally you're just coasting. There are a lot of things in life that we start off with good, noble ambition. But when they get hard, we check out. We turn off because, frankly, difficult things, you may find this surprising, are difficult. And ultimately, I don't know about you, there are some days I don't wake up with the first thought in my mind being, I want to have a really challenging day of really difficult tasks that I don't even know if I can complete, so I'll be unsure of how much I've accomplished so I can sleep soundly tonight. Doesn't that sound like a great day? No. We freely give ourselves to this idea of avoid what's uncomfortable because, frankly, it's easier some days. But when it comes to our faith, something that we all acknowledge that matters to us, something that causes us to come to places like this of worship, we have to be careful because that narrative of avoid what's uncomfortable, only take what's easy, will also try to show up here. And what Bonhoeffer recognized in the Sermon on the Mount because of what Jesus is presenting and what we'll talk about today is that the life of a disciple isn't easy. It can be uncomfortable, but it's so worthwhile. As we journey through Matthew together, and there will be selections from the Sermon on the Mount because Jesus, like every great preacher, was a little long-winded during this section, and they captured a lot of what he had to say, and there's too much to go over in this one session. So I encourage you, as you have time over the next couple weeks, as we continue to reflect on different parts of the Sermon on the Mount, read it. It begins in Matthew 5. And the first thing that Jesus wants to do is to answer a question that I think most of us ask, and toddlers certainly do, which is why? Why do this whole discipleship thing? What is the driving motivation? Because often, a sufficient driving motivation helps to carry us through difficult times. And he paints this beautiful image in Matthew 5, verse 13. You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Jesus, from the beginning, highlights that the life of the disciple is to bring something into the world. To draw attention to something in the world. Salt, as I've learned, is not just meant for Tex-Mex chips, which is what I was convinced of growing up. You see, salt does incredible things in the hands of someone that knows how to cook, like my wife. It takes what I would prepare, which is a horrible, bland mash of broccoli and sweet potatoes and who knows what else, but in her capable hands with salt, it creates this amazing dish. It convinces even our son that broccoli is his friend. The work of a true disciple, I present to you. Salt makes taste pop. Light brings clarity into dark places. It brings into focus those things on which you should be focused. That is the purpose. Jesus is using these illustrations to say disciples are people who don't just become disciples for their own sake. You see, all that conversation I had earlier about French class and doing things that are easy, that's very eye-centric. It's as if I'm approaching life and saying, what am I getting out of this? Jesus is already turning that to say, God's plan for you. It's not just about yourself. It's about your community. It's about your family. It's about the world. It's about you living and growing in a way that you can do those things that God is calling you to do. God's answer to this cultural narrative of just do what's easy, avoid what's uncomfortable is no, no, no. By my power and my strength and my love, you can overcome difficult and uncomfortable things and live a changed and better life. That's a powerful why. But something happens, right? We start off, and perhaps you have these fits and these starts. This is something that happened with me, is I was having a hard time taking that knowledge in my head. I know what God is asking me to do, and I'm putting it into practice. And Jesus, again, sensing almost the objections, or perhaps he knew there would be executive pastors in the room. They're always going to ask those systematic, annoying questions, like, how is this sustainable, Jesus? He brings up this illustration of what happens if you don't allow yourself to be filled by the things that God would ask that you be filled by. So here we are in chapter 6, verse 22. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. And then the light in you is darkness. How great is the darkness? His point is, you were designed to be filled by something. You are a vessel, a creation that is designed to be filled with love and grace and mercy and compassion. That is your purpose. However, like all vessels, we know that they can be filled with other things they weren't originally intended for. And Christ's point is, listen, guys, I understand that change is difficult, that the life of the disciple is difficult, but you have to understand if you're either filling yourself with the things of God or you're not. But not being filled is not happening. So the disciple understands that to be passive is really to not acknowledge what's going on around them, that if I'm not doing something in the way that I should, if I'm not growing to be the person that God wants me to be, that I'm growing in a different direction. What may seem easier because it's more comfortable or more convenient is ultimately shaping us still. So the disciple understands, I don't want to just be shaped with kind of the ebbs and flow of the wind. I want to be shaped with a clear purpose, for the purpose that was given to me and the reason that I'm here. What I love about communion is it's an opportunity for us to acknowledge what we've been filled with that we would rather we hadn't been. And we have a chance to take that out and to try again, to once again open ourselves to the Holy Spirit, to be filled with light and not darkness. To remember our purpose, our why, to be this salt, to be this light to the world, is to bring something to other people. And that thing that we bring is a deeper realization of what a relationship with God can be all about. I want to end with a reflection on a very convicting passage. I keep saying it's my favorite, but what I mean by that is it's the thing that highlights one of my great struggles as a person of faith. It comes from chapter 7, verse 1. And I think as we read it, it will be familiar. And the thing that I love about it is that it proves ultimately that discipleship is always pragmatic. Like I said, we don't learn how to be disciples up here to then not do anything. Being a disciple changes our heart, and when your heart is changed, your actions are changed. Chapter 7, verse 1. Do not judge so that you may not be judged. For with the judgment you make, you will be judged, and the measure you give will be the measure you get. Why do you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but do not notice the log in your own eye? Or how can you say to your neighbor, let me take the speck out of your eye, while the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your neighbor's eye. Here's a subtle way that what's easy and comfortable sneaks its way back into our spiritual formation. As if we're honest, we are much more comfortable commenting on how effective other disciples are than we are reflecting on our own discipleship. It is much easier, and frankly, sometimes more convenient, to sit down at a table and look what everyone else is doing and let's keep the focus over there than it is to let that lens change to us and the ways in which we're struggling and hurt. That requires a level of vulnerability and openness that frankly is difficult and hurts sometimes. I feel convicted of this every time that I preach because it can be very easy for a minister to get up here and say, now listen guys, I've read the Bible and I've been to seminary, so let me tell you how you sad saps can get all your lives in order and let's fix this, all right? Because as long as I'm keeping the focus out there on you, I'm hoping no one's looking up here at me. And I don't think that's just preachers. I think that's people following after Jesus. That's disciples. That's, again, that tension that rises up because change is difficult. It's costly. It requires something of us. And if we're honest, some days it's not something we really care to give. No one likes to have to admit they made a mistake. No one likes to get to say, hey, you know how I got really mad and upset and blew my top? I shouldn't have done that. It's hard. It's difficult. So before we talk about some of the things that I want us to reflect on and focus on for the new year, because our whole theme of this year is discipleship, growing in our faith, not just as the people that are already here, but in those that are outside of our church walls. But we have to recognize what it takes to change. What it takes to change is a convicting and powerful why. I think that's one thing the church does well. Why? Because we believe in the power of Jesus Christ to transform the world. Why? Because we want to connect the world with God's love because we believe so much the love that's found at this table, that's represented by the cross, that's found in the person of Jesus, is something the whole world needs. But then we have to acknowledge it's going to be tough. It's going to require us not just to focus on others, but ourselves. It's going to require us to change, myself very much included. And then it's okay for us to acknowledge some days when we make mistakes. The worst thing that we can do is to do what I did when I left that French oral exam and just give up. Failure, making mistakes, is not the end of our story ever. What is so powerful about the gospel message to me is that it looks at any event in any situation and says, no, God's love, God's will, God's purpose can still happen. It takes that shift, which I struggle with sometimes, to look at a situation and say it's hopeless, and it says there is no situation without hope. Because God's love cannot be overcome. It overcomes all things. Just because we do something uncomfortable doesn't mean it can't be overcome. In fact, with the help of God, we can overcome all things. So if you find yourself being a person that's convicted to want to follow after Jesus, if you find yourself who's a person that makes mistakes but you still desire to try again, well, congratulations, you're on the life and path of discipleship. You're someone that's starting to live into what it means to have costly grace. And over the next 2 weeks, we're going to talk more and more about some of these practical ways that we can be a congregation that's faithfully becoming the people that God always envisioned that we can be. Will you pray with me? God, we have heard this challenging passage. It's not easy. It's difficult because it requires us to look at ourselves and perhaps some ways in which we have given up or not tried our best or thought this is too hard. So Lord, open our hearts to be infused and filled by the Holy Spirit yet again. Lead us in new directions, in fresh reflections. Allow us to be the people you always envisioned we could be. People desperate to show the world the power of your love, a power that can overcome any discomfort or pain, a power that can restore and rejuvenate any relationship. May we be a people that live into this vision and mission of connecting the world with God's love. Through that, I pray.
Thank you for listening. For more information about St. Peter's and our mission to connect the world with God's love, please visit us at stpkaty.org. God bless.